Every week on our show Sound Effect, we tell stories from around the Northwest. This next story comes from an episode called What a Mess. Sound Effect host Jennifer Wing has more.
Today we're digging into the messier side of life. After someone dies, there's usually a funeral or some type of service to plan. Maybe there's an estate to figure out who gets what. Ruby Brown's brother, Andy, died last summer. He was 57 years old. He suffered from depression and took his own life, an overdose of pain meds. And I have to warn you that this interview, it gets into some dark material. So if you've struggled with depression, you might want to step away from the radio right now. The interview's about 8 minutes long. So when Andy was younger, when he and Ruby were kids, Ruby had a hard time keeping up with her older brother. Things that would stump most of us came really easy for him.
He had an amazing amount of talent. He picked up a trumpet, and before we knew it, he had all the solos and was in first chair. He picked up a camera, and he was an amazing photographer. He did several art exhibits that he got paid for. He picked up a piece of charcoal in his junior year of high school and drew a picture of Mark Twain on his deathbed, and he won an award for it. So extremely talented man and extremely talented artist.
And what was your relationship like as you were adults?
I left the East Coast as soon as I could. When I hit 18, I was out of there and flew to California. And I think that really affected our relationship greatly. I think he felt abandoned by me. His mental illness had already started to hit at that time. And I think he felt like I didn't care about his struggles and what he was dealing with, and that all I cared about was myself and my own life, which, looking back, there's probably some truth to that.
Were you aware of his struggles?
I knew he struggled with depression. I knew he had mood swings that were pretty severe. They'd said that he was bipolar disorder when he was about 17. He'd been diagnosed with that. So I knew he was suffering from that. I knew that it was really hard for him to focus on things. And I knew at times that he had suicidal ideations, but he didn't really share those very deeply.
Mm. And when you would visit him, where would you meet? Would you ever go to his house or his apartment?
No, interestingly enough. My folks lived, my dad still lives there, outside of Philadelphia, about 75 miles out near Reading, Pennsylvania. And Andy lived in Section 8 housing down in West Philadelphia. So I never had the occasion to visit him in his apartment, and he never really encouraged that.
Okay. So you two are kind of leading separate lives. You're on separate coasts of the country, and he continues to struggle with his mental illness. And then one day you get a phone call with some pretty horrible news. Can you tell us about that day?
It was just this past summer. My father called and said, I got to tell you, your brother's in the hospital. He's in intensive care. He's tried to take his life, and we don't know if he's going to make it. It wasn't until Tuesday till my dad finally convinced them that they did not need to continue life support, and they pulled the plug. He was not breathing on his own, and that was it. He died.
And with when someone passes, there are many things to tie up. You have to plan the funeral. You have to sort through the affairs. And I understand you were tasked with cleaning out his apartment.
Yeah.
What was it like when you opened the door to his apartment?
I was just overwhelmed. It was filled to the brim with stuff. He was not able to throw things out, is something that I learned. I hadn't witnessed this growing up. I did know my brother liked to hold on to things and didn't like to let go of things, but I didn't realize to what extent this had kind of taken over his world. And he wrote down everything he was thinking all the time. So constantly pieces of paper floating around with his thoughts and nowhere to sit. He had windows in his apartment, which until we cleaned it out, you wouldn't have realized, because things were so covered with things.
Oh, you couldn't see the windows.
You couldn't see out, yeah. He had an enormous amount of socks and underwear, drawers and drawers and drawers, and we're talking like brand new in the packages still, socks and underwear. Under the bed, yeah, I found a bunch of plates of half-eaten food, presents that I'd sent him that were never really opened, just the boxes still sitting there. I filled up three huge dumpsters with just papers and clothes and things that we weren't going to be able to do anything with.
Going through all of this, were there any gifts that you found?
Well, first of all, my brother Andy was a photographer, and he saved, as I have been saying, everything. So every single photograph he's ever taken, I was able to box those up, and I took them back to my father's house. We found a lot of sentimental things, like my grandfather's watch. I found a little voice recorder, and on that he had taken some really painstaking moments with my mom several years ago before she passed away, and recorded a bunch of history with her.
This is Andy. It's Father's Day, June 16, 2013. I'm with Mom and Dad at Phoebe Burke. Mom, I wanted to ask you, what do you remember about the one-room schoolhouse? Do you remember what it looked like?
Sure. It looked like one big room.
And that's been just fascinating to listen to their two voices now because they're both gone. So that's been an incredible gift.
And you said that there were materials in this apartment that he wrote on.
I
understand you found some journals that he had. What did you find inside those notebooks?
Well, I've got one of his last journals here in front of me, and he just documented everything in here, his conversations with my father, his conversations with the doctor, some of his conversations with me.
And they go back a long time, right?
Yeah,
I mean, they
yeah.
go back years. Can you see the progression of his mental illness through these journals?
I think you can. And like, here's an excerpt I'll read to you. He says, I've been dying. This is from June 14th, 2015. I've been dying for a long, long time, and I've been very weary, but I've refused to die. Now I'm tired of living. I'm tired, very tired, and all but given up hope. My will to live is hanging on by a thread. I'm spiritually worn out.
How did this experience change you?
I felt in some ways that I let him down, and so I've been trying to figure out how to make peace with that in myself. Because when someone's gone, and once they're gone, it's really hard to make peace. You can't say I'm sorry anymore, you know? So I've been trying with folks I know who suffer from mental illness to be more responsive in my everyday life, whether it's a student I work with or a community member or someone I just know. I've been trying to be more responsive in the moment. It changed me in terms of my own hoarding behaviors. I don't like to throw things out either, I've come to realize. And I came back from the East Coast this summer feeling like I have got to clean stuff up, and I just don't want to leave that to anybody to do for me. So I immediately, with the help of my spouse, started cleaning out my closet and my room and just getting rid of things. And it's been really cathartic.
Well, Ruby, thank you so much. Thank you for sharing.
Okay. Thank you.